Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Zach Barris. I pastor of a community of students called Bread and Belonging, supported by Luther Campus Ministry and St. Aidan's Episcopal Church here at the University of Colorado, Boulder.
Zach, we're both ELCA pastors.
We are both active on the roster of ministers of Word and Sacrament in the Evangelical Lutheran Church, last I checked.
While we do not share a synodical bishop,
no,
we do share a presiding bishop, which is another way of saying national bishop. I had to keep saying that to my congregation because what does presiding even mean? And our shared national presiding bishop, Bishop Elizabeth Eden, a.k.a. on this podcast only, EZE, came to St. Mark's.
I decided to share her with you. I was like, we've been having her here with us too much. Just kidding. She has not been here. But big, exciting news, Matt, for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I told our mutual friend, Pastor Jen Amos Burgos, and she said, God, that must have been stressful. And it was. It was. Bishop Eden was nice, though. She's, you know, just a human. So there's no need to be stressed other than all the stress that you put on yourself. Couple of highlights. We told her to wear Is God's Work Our Hands Sunday. So that was fun. She wore a T-shirt with instead of a congregation on the back, it said campaign for the ELCA. So that was pretty cool. We invited her to wear Chucks because that is liturgical wear here at St. Mark's. I like to wear the liturgical colors and my Chucks. That day we invited her to wear Chucks. Zach, she brought game. She brought Converse.
I saw
game.
It. I she saw had, the pick.
She had ELCA Chucks. They had like the ELCA logo patterned and repeated over the shoe. Amazing. And on the tongue of the shoe, one shoe said presiding, the other bishop. The only thing that would have been cooler is if that was tattooed on her fingers, presiding and bishop, but there wasn't.
We don't have bishops for life, so that's...
Yeah, that's true. But what an amazing thing. Obviously. I mean, she brought... There was some pretty
Rowan
serious
Williams, Chucks
Williams,
though,
game.
His fingers say Archbishop of Canterbury.
So that was fun. She wore Chucks. So she got to worship with us. I did find out she's a Cleveland sports fan because she saw the Chicago Cubs hat in my office and gave me a bad time about that. But it was when she was in my office that the highlight of my time with Bishop Eden came. We were looking at the lovely vinyl records on my wall, and I thought that was a perfect time, Zach, perfect time to segue into inviting her to be a guest on The Vinyl Preacher. So it was that moment when we were looking at the vinyl records that I told our presenting bishop, so I have a podcast.
I think you said it, it made me so happy how you said it the first time to me, Matt, which essentially was something along the lines of the hardest part of being a 40-year-old white male in the United States is meeting a celebrity and figuring out the right time to say, so I have a podcast.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good comedy bit for me one day. Like, I feel like that's like I have a podcast is the punchline, and I'm just going to keep working on it.
Until
I get there. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. She was
and we've
not
got her
committal.
Book. She's coming on next week, right?
Yeah, not yet, but we'll. You know, I think we can work on it. I think we can work on it. She was a little bit non-committal. I got a non-committal face, I think, but maybe now she knows who we are. So, you know, you got to take a swing, you know, got to take a swing.
Did one
you
of her handlers lean over and whisper what a podcast was to her?
No. Nope. Didn't see that happen. So anyway, yeah, presiding bishop at my congregation. How often does that happen? That's like a once in a career thing, right?
I've never had a presiding bishop at anything. I've actually had a former... Whatever the title is, I don't know. Like the former presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church was kind of in residence here during a sabbatical or at St. Aidan's.
Oh,
hung out with us a bit.
Nice.
So that's as close,
yeah,
close as I've gotten.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
But I do have some other celebrities, Matt, that I plan to rub shoulders with here in the coming weeks. I think I mentioned it on the podcast, my attempts to to organize, host, and promote a concert at my home for Phoebe Bridgers, Grammy-nominated artist. Have I talked about that on the podcast?
Yeah. I don't know, but you should talk about it again.
Well, if you've missed this thing, Phoebe Bridgers, who's incredible, whose music I love, and who I've got really got into during the pandemic, finally is going on the road and is playing outdoor venues only for her post-pandemic or whatever time this is, pandemic tour. And it includes zero stops in the Mountain West. And so that was a bummer to me. And so I tweeted at Phoebe, at Trader Joe, which is a fantastic Twitter handle, and said, hey, I've got a pergola. My backyard has a hill. It's kind of a natural amphitheater. I'd be glad to host an outdoor show for you here at my home. I've got a beer fridge. We can take care of concessions. Let's make this happen. Phoebe has not yet responded. I imagine when you're a star of that level, there are a lot of legalities to figure out and get the lawyers involved. Not long after that, though, Matt, maybe even that same day, I was on the Spotify, like we often are, and Clint Snide had released a new single, or re-released a single off of his most recent album, and I was like, I was reminded, Clint Snide's good. I wonder what he's... if he's touring right now. And so I went to his website and I looked under the tour section, and he is not touring. He doesn't have like a formal tour, but he does have a form you can fill out if you're interested in hosting a house concert. And I said to myself, well, that's funny. I just tweeted at Phoebe about this. I wonder what it would cost for Clem Snide. So as a joke, or not a joke, I just wanted to know how much it's going to cost. I filled it out. No expectations it was going to happen. And I didn't hear anything. And then 2 weeks later, I got an email from Eve, who performs under the name Clem Snide. I got an email from his personal Gmail account. And he said he was going to be in my town on November 11th and wanted to know if that date worked. And then the worst part, Matt, because then like I had to take it super seriously, is he was like, by the way, yeah, I'm not like charging a price or whatever, but whatever you can spare for the Clem Snide Preservation Society would be great. And then I was like, oh no, this is like, this must be what it feels like when people are like, oh, what kind of honorarium should we pay you for a wedding or whatever? And I'm just like, exactly. Hey, I mean, don't worry about it. I mean, it'd be great. It'd be very appreciated, but whatever. And people are like, no, I know I'm supposed to pay the minister and I don't know what to pay you. So he did that to me, and we've been going back and forth, Matt, and because I was like, I need a ballpark. I need to, like, I don't want to pay you $43 and, like, two beers that have been in the fridge for a long time that I don't like. But he came back with, like, you know, anything from, like, a couple hundred dollars. Some people do a couple thousand, just whatever. And so I was like, wow, that's – I could probably swing a couple hundred, like – bring friends, like everybody pitch in to the Clem Snide Preservation Society. So I got to email him back again one more time. And I think I'm hosting a concert with like a real musician. Incredible. At my house. Clem Snide, in case you were wondering, if you're not up on your super indie folks, Clem Snide had a lot of success around the year 2000. And it was like an alt country band with other people in it. And they hit the kind of like indie, like super indie success roller coaster where Beloved, they did have the theme song on the TV NBC show Ed, but never got to like out of the indie like circle where they actually like made a bunch of money. And so there's some good articles. There's a Rolling Stone article that came out about Clem Snide when he released a new album in 2020, that, you know, there's some bankruptcy and divorce and all that kind of stuff. And so in this like new rebirth of Clem Snide, it's just Eve performing by himself, but Scott Avett helped write and produce the new album. And they did Tiny Desk Concert together, and he's in all the music videos and doing the vocals, and they're harmonizing. And it's, if you're into Avett Brothers, you're going to really like it. And it's super sad and kind of like about Christian mysticism is like one of his nerd areas. So I'm so excited, Matt. I'm so excited. I've got a solo stove now, so we're going to break out the solo stove. It might be chilly. And I'm going to have to figure out the perfect time to say to Eve. So I have a podcast.
Yes. Yes, my advice, I would wait until he's at your house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Don't do it in the email, because you might scare him away.
Absolutely not.
Just wait. Maybe until he's done playing. Just casually mentioned.
We were joking about this, Matt, in a non-recorded Zoom situation. And we've mentioned that you are, you know, perhaps one of the world's largest, like, biggest merch enthusiasts, and we were plotting out what the show would look like, and that you would put you in charge of merch. Unfortunately, listeners, I have been told that Eve and Clem Stein's going to bring his own merch, but we're going to let Matt run the merch booth. So,
yes.
But he doesn't have to or get to design, like, a concert t-shirt for our health show.
Too bad.
So if you're in the Louisville metro area on November 11th, I want to chip in a couple dollars to support the Clemside Preservation Society. Come on over. It's brought to you by the Vinyl Preacher.
Will you pass around an offering plate?
Like, oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty cool way to do it.
I want to get the ones on sticks, though. Like the big, long stick one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a rowboat.
That'd be cool.
For money.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You're hitting the big time, Zach.
Ugh.
Concert promoter.
This podcast is about to take off. No offense to Sarah R. Speed, who was fantastic last week. I just feel like if we can get like a super indie musician on the podcast, then it's going to blow up.
Oh, my goodness. I wish, speaking of Sarah R. Speed last week, just a follow-up shout-out to her amazing work. We've been using a Sanctified Art, and including her, the liturgy that I believe she wrote. And my wife, Chris, got to sit in on the worship service this past Sunday because somebody else led Sunday school. And she said to me afterwards, "You didn't write that liturgy, did you? Because it was beautiful. It was really nice. You didn't write that, though, did you? That would have been a lot of work." And I was like, "Nope, I did not." But I did get to talk to the person who did last week. So thank you again to Sarah for coming on.
Promo code VinylPreacher. This is really a legit promo code. That's all one word.
For the promo code.
We got get ready for next week, Matt. Lamont Wells, the program director for Lutheran Campus Ministry, the Lumen Network, is going to be on the pod next week. We got guests all over the place.
Woo! Awesome. Are you going to give him some tips about modifying the Lumen logo to match your campus?
We should. I've actually decided the thing that I dislike most about the Lumen logo. Who, again, the style guide says you're not supposed to change the colors of it. And I think we missed a really obvious opportunity to make the logo modifiable to your campus and the colors of your school, which many of us have gone ahead and done anyway. But I've tried to, like, figure out ways to use it because we don't use the name Lumen because we're in this, like, Lutheran Episcopal deal. It's not student-facing for us. But I've tried to, like, salvage the cross logo thing and turn it into a Bread and Belonging thing. But it turns out, Megan and I spent, like, multiple days on it this summer. Turns out I just really dislike the cross itself. Like, if you take away those, like, leaves, it's just super, like, not cool cross. No offense to the designer, but...
Wow,
it's just aesthetics.
Yeah, we got opinions here.
Lukewarm opinions. These texts are not lukewarm, though, Matt.
They are not. They are not lukewarm. Oh, we got some good stuff. We're continuing through the Year of Royalty by Noah and Joe. I don't know. It gets so random here at the end.
You know what people need, Matt? Here at the height of the Delta wave is some readings from Job. People have been getting too high. We've been feeling too good about things. Let's read Job.
The second half of Year B, semi-continuous readings, reminds me of the way that you once described California. As you get to the end of the country, it's just like everything just spits out onto the end. It's just all kinds of, I don't see, just something like that is the way you describe it. It's just everything just kind of gets
discharged
random. Yeah. And that's kind of, we got Job, we got Esther, we got all good stuff, bad stuff. It's all just kind of here, just randomly thrown out there at the end.
Just a collection of discarded texts on the beach.
There you go. Job 1:1 and then 2:1-10. There was once a man in the land of Uz, whose name was
worst
Job.
Worst version of Wicked ever. The land of Uz. Uz.
Yeah, they couldn't use the Oz because of copyright obviously issues. So, it's Uz. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. One day the heavenly beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answered the Lord, "I'm going to and fro on the earth, walking up and down on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There's no one like him on the earth, a blameless, upright man who fears God and turns away from evil," just like the narrator said a few moments ago. "He still persists in his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him for no reason." Oh, that was a twist. Then Satan answered the Lord, "Skin for skin. What? All the people have, they will give to save their lives. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone, his flesh, and he'll curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well. It's in your power. Only spare his life." So Satan went up from the presence of the Lord and inflicted loathsome sores on Job from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Job took a potsherd with which to scrape himself and sat among the ashes.
Back scratcher.
And then his wife said to him, "Do you still persist in your integrity? Curse God and die." Yep, something my spouse says to me on a daily basis. But he said to her, "You speak as any foolish woman would speak."
Oh, God.
"Shall we receive..." Interesting tie-in to the gospel reading. "Shall we receive the good at the hand of God and not receive the bad?" And in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Word of God, word of life.
You know, oftentimes I complain, Matt, that as the pastor, the preacher, I don't get to read the Old Testament reading, and they're such good stories, and I want to read them publicly.
Right.
As a cisgendered white male, I'm okay not reading this one. I'll sit that one out.
Yeah, it's... Gosh. I mean, how... I'm not sure yet how to preach on it, but I guess I want to say about the story, like I wish we could free ourselves from like a really pious way of reading the story where like, you know, we have to treat like as if you just read this as like a farce or something. Like you're like, yeah, it seems like the heavenly beings are nuts and the gods must be crazy. And like, what is happening? And Job really is pretty foolish. Like it's just like this whole opening is just, it's nuts.
Right. I think I mentioned it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, Matt, but I've now started, I'm in it with a group of students. They're doing this queer catechism thing. The idea is that we're taking the catechism and using queer as a verb, right, to queer it, to confuse it, to look at it from different ways, with a particular eye towards gender, sexuality, and systems of oppression. And I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, I think that's the best, most faithful way to get into Job here, especially at the beginning and an introduction, is to use it to, like, to reset the story, replace it, to confuse how we've, like, heard it before with that sort of piousness, and to really lean into it as a farcical thing. This is already, like, I've just got so many notes on this from the first two commandments that our students have talked about in queer catechism. Number one, "One day the heavenly beings..." "You shall have no other gods before me," which, you know, one of the interesting, neat things is not that there are no other gods, but that you will have no other gods before this God. The literal translation of the Hebrew here is "the sons of God," which is interesting. I don't know what, like, heavenly being sounds weird, but it certainly sounds like there are a lot of, like, God-like creatures, beings, entities existing, also up, right? If you're looking at this directionally, they're all up in the heavens, and Satan is up in the heavens, which is not where Dante would have us put him, the accuser here. They're all just chilling up there, because it's implied, right? It's not implied, it's stated, right? Satan's been going up and down to earth the whole time, and they're just shooting the shit, chilling up in the heavens, all these God creatures. And that is not the way most folks hear, like, the first commandment even, right? Like,
yeah,
two verses in, all of a sudden, like, you're like, what? Like, this is not the Christian tradition as I was given it.
Yeah. Job is in wisdom literature, right? Isn't that is it usually classified? Like,
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, it makes me think, I mean, this is the first time that I've thinking out loud here. It feels like Ecclesiastes too, right? Where it's like, it it's not, it doesn't feel like super pious. It feels like existentialism. Like, this could be Camus, like, writing this thing about, like, the absurdity of life.
They make the funny looking hats and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just, it's so, like, I mean, it begins like a fairy tale. There was once a man in the land of, I mean, it's just, it's so, like, and then it's just so extreme. He's blameless. He's perfect. You know, all this kind of stuff. But then really, like, this whole heavenly being scene, like, it is just, it's nuts. And I think it's, like, the absurdity of life. And then how do you start to, if you start there, if that's your starting point, this is all absurd.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there to find meaning? And I think it eventually goes to an interesting place, which we're not going to get today. So I don't know how you present this opening story, but I don't know. I mean, that's where it starts, right? It starts in this absurdity.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not how we traditionally read it, right? No. We traditionally read it like, see, everything happens for a reason. And so you should be like, and it's like, that's, I don't actually think that's how the story's written. I don't think it's us like trying to like do some new 21st century thing. I think the story, like, it looks like it was written to be a farce originally.
Yeah.
And I think we've done some weird stuff with it recently.
I mean, it's just, if you just read it closely, right? Like,
right.
Or pay attention to what you're reading. God instigates this whole thing. Hey, here's an idea, God. Next time you're talking to Satan, just don't talk about me at all. Like, God brings it up. It's not like Satan's like, I bet you that this Job over here, God's like, have you even thought about how, have you considered? I did the Hebrew study on it, and it's nothing super interesting, but it's, at least it gets translated in a weird way. It opens with, the action of the story opens with, the Lord said to Satan, have you even considered my servant Job? There, he's perfect. I bet you couldn't even get him to not be perfect, right? Like, this is a God-initiated deal. This is a terrible, like, thanks a lot, God. Yeah, it's like one of my new favorite new Clem Snide songs, Matt. Spoilers going on the podcast. Roger Ebert is a beautiful song off the new album that centers around Robert Ebert's alleged dying words, where he wrote a note to his wife that said, it's all an elaborate hoax. Because sometimes you, like, pastorally just need affirmation that this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And especially perhaps in these days where, like, I don't know, that's where I'm personally at right now as we record, Matt. It's all an elaborate hoax. I think I started the non-recording part of our call with something similar to that. That it's all ridiculous and the gods aren't doing the things that gods are supposed to be doing, and people are doing weird things and scraping stuff boils off their bodies with pot shards. That can be good news, right? That it doesn't make sense, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, I'm all for late at night trying to work out the theodicy to figure out why bad things happen. But the reality, I think, is you end up right back here with, it's absurd. I don't know why bad things happen. They don't have to happen, but they do.
Yeah.
I'd much rather deal with that through farce than with chaos, entropy.
Right. Yeah. I wonder, hypothesis, like, again, sometimes we have read Job as a book about, like, why do bad things happen. I wonder if that's not actually what the book is about, but I wonder if it's about how do we live in a world where bad things happen. How do we treat each other in that world? Because it's going to go into these conversations where his friends are not great.
Great friendship. You've got a great God and great friends and a great wife. It's really going good for you.
Yeah. Like, it's like there's this little story and then there's like lots of conversation. And it's like, here's how not to interact with somebody who's suffering. And then it ends with this place of like kind of awe. And that's just another whole other thing that we won't necessarily go on that rabbit hole today. But I wonder if it's not about like, because it treats the why as ultimately like, I mean, you could take it literally and be like, yep, this is why, because God pulls strings. Or you could be like, actually, it's not. It's more about like, how do we live in the absurdity of life?
Yeah.
So, Well, good luck, preachers.
Good luck. I have to preach this week. Wait a second, man. Oh, it's the worst.
Well, acknowledge the absurdity. That's what we got.
Acknowledge the absurdity. Thank goodness the gospel is much easier to preach on in a current context. Matt, we're keeping it moving in Mark, as Mark is wont to do on the back half of our Markan journey. When some Pharisees come, and to test Jesus, they ask, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And Jesus answered them, what did Moses command you? And they say, well, Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of dismissal and to divorce her. But Jesus said to them, because of your hardness of heart, he wrote this commandment for you. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. And then in the house, the disciples asked him again about this matter. And he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. People were breathing just a hard cut to the next scene. People were bringing little children to him in order that he might touch them. And the disciples spoke sternly to him. When Jesus saw this, he was indignant and said to them, let the little children come to me. Do not stop them, for it is to such as these that the kingdom of God belongs. Truly, I tell you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will never enter it. And he took them up in his arms, laid his hands on them, and blessed them. The good news of Jesus, obviously.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Well, this isn't problematic, is it? Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. I mean, so once again, like, you gotta dial it back, because we've done such harmful things with this passage in recent decades, generations, centuries. Making this text about divorce when really, like, it's more about flipping the patriarchy on its head, centering children, which, as we've talked about at length in the podcast, was an unusual thing. Jesus is doing a lot of table turning here, but you might not necessarily read it that way without a little context.
Yeah. The thing is, a thing you know, but because we're using the same words here, it's hard to remember or won't necessarily be readily available present to folks in the pews, because so many of us read the Bible looking for things that are applicable, because there's a lot that obviously isn't applicable, right? Like, what is the Job story? Like, find the Job story in your life is a lot of hard work. But we know people, we are people who are married and divorced and or considering divorce and all those things. And so, oh, here's something super applicable. Finally, that's something I don't have to, like, dig through. And yet, Matt, our cultural and societal practices around marriage have changed dramatically in, I don't know, the past 40 years. That's also true. They've changed even more over the past several thousand years. I mean, it's still very common in some places around the world, right? Like in the West, we have this, like, you need to be in love to be married, and you get to choose your partner, and it's about you should get married if you really love each other or whatever. But arranged marriages are still the norm in places. And arranged marriages were the only kind of marriages that happened in the ancient Near East. And they were mostly, primarily, an economic relationship, much more than a love sort of relationship. And, you know, the woman did not have much, if any, significant say in that relationship. And so Jesus is talking about something that, who's, like, the terms for it are familiar to us, but in fact is something pretty alien to all of us. Mm-hmm. And so when divorce is not about a relationship between two people, I mean, that's when divorce gets messy anyway, right? Like when there are kids and stuff and all that sort of like intertwined lives, the more intertwined the lives are, the messier typically, right, divorce stuff is and the harder it is on everybody. You're talking about intergenerational families that are becoming one family, and all of the economic and cultural ties have to be separated there. And one of the things that I harp on this podcast is that one of the big social ills that Jesus was concerned about and hoped to remedy was these like family feuds, you know, the McCoys and the what's the other West Virginia family,
Hatfields.
There we go, Hatfields and McCoys. These like blood back and forth things that ripped apart society. And so, if you wanted a good way to start a family feud, divorce would do that, because it involved, you know, especially if you're talking about getting remarried, and the assumption in the Bible whenever divorce, it's always for the sake of like marrying someone else and being connected to a different family. And so there's not just because they're not like in love anymore or whatever, that's not what's happening here, right? That there's honor shame wrapped up in that as well, and that there's always a shameful loser for biblical divorce and the biblical understanding of marriage. And so that means there's offense that needs to be revenged. Vengeance needs to be taken. And so the community, the society is torn apart. How I would read this, Matt, or encourage you to read it and think about it for your preaching and to explain it that way, is that this isn't talking about the relationship between two people, but in a small village, it's talking about the relationships in the community. And what Jesus is saying here, right, is that the relationship of marriage becomes a blood relationship. And I think that's the vision Jesus has for the community, and that you can't divorce your community from itself, and that we all are related and connected and have to live together and figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I mean, think about that in a time of COVID, right, where we're all talking about my responsibility to the community or my own individual freedom, which is actually something that's happening here. Like, even just reading the text, the Pharisees are, like, listen to the way it's presented. It isn't like, hey, is divorce okay? No, it's, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? The man is the subject of the sentence. Does the man have the freedom to do whatever he wants? Well, Moses allowed the man to write a certificate of... Like, of course, like, this is part of the way the society is structured. But just reading the text, they're centering this person and this person's decision. And what Jesus does is to equalize it, to say, God made the male and female for this reason. They're going to become one flesh. What God has joined together, Jesus' words are all about equalizing that relationship. Now, obviously, like, again, historical context, not perfect, but just reading the text, Jesus makes that move there from individual to community, right? And so there's, I don't know, if you want to get political, preacher, talk about your individual personal freedoms versus your responsibility to your community. Mm-hmm. This text actually gives you a way in to do that.
Yeah. And the marriage here, we understand marriage as a legal relationship. It is like, you know, for clergy people in lots of places, I don't know what it is in California. It's not, I'm not an agent of the state in Colorado when I do a wedding. But one of the super weird things is you end up being like an agent of the state, and it's the only place where like clergy, like where religion and the government are in bed together. And it can be super weird. But we think about it in a legal term, but if it's a, you know, one flesh, we're not talking primarily about sex or anything here, but we're talking about a relationship that becomes a blood relationship, and that changes that whole family tree's world. As a person who has blood relationships with people who've been married and divorced and remarried, honestly, those things didn't like super shape my life. But in a society where you have extreme obligations to people who you're blood related to, if you're, you know, a cousin of the woman who's getting married, because of this marriage, now you have those obligations for all these other people you didn't have before, and they have the same things for you. And that can't be teased apart.
Yeah. Yeah, and in that, Jesus is again, like, taking the side of the vulnerable folks in this scenario, right? So, yeah. And which is, again, what he does in the last section, or with the hard turn to suddenly bringing little children to him. Hey, just noticed you're talking about some painful, difficult topics. Here's some kids.
Hey, maybe that's... I typically read this as, like, it's like the epitome of Mark's dumb disciples who don't get anything, because it was like 3 weeks ago that Jesus was like, whoever welcomes a child such as this, right? And then 3 weeks later, in our reading, a few verses later, they're like, no, don't let the kids come. Maybe it's like, hey, Jesus, kids over here, we forgot that teaching. You should move on to this one, because that'd be, everybody likes kids, right? We can't argue in front of the kids.
Here we go again. Oh.
Well, at least there's a lot there, Matt. You know, there's a lot to preach on.
Yeah.
There are things to say, which is always better than not having.
Amen. So, in addition to speaking, what are we listening to?
Well, Matt, I am going to put my new best friend, Clem Snide's Roger Ebert, on the playlist first. It's all an elaborate hoax. It's so good. Check it out. And then, Matt... perhaps we've not fully appreciated the treasure trove of songs about divorce on Spotify. So I'm going to go with a new divorce song to me. Well, I'm going to put the original on first, D-I-V-O-R-C-E from Tammy Wynette. I'm going to put that on the playlist, Matt, because that's a fun one. And then Liz Phair has a song off of her 1993 album, Exile in Guyville, called Divorce Song, which is pretty cool. And has the last verse is only two lines, but it's pretty good. The license said you had to stick around until I was dead. But if you're tired of looking at my face, I guess I already am. Woo!
Good stuff. Wow. Wow. Speaking of 90s female artists, I got an email from the Hollywood Bowl today telling me that I should go see Alanis Morissette. Celebrate Jagged Little Pill next week at the Hollywood Bowl. Because of that, I've been listening to Jagged Little Pill all day.
So good.
So I'll throw on, obviously, like, too obvious, but it's just, since we're talking about these relationship issues, just, you ought to know, so stormy. So stormy. Mm-hmm. Just even listen to it again. So, so good. So Alanis Morissette, maybe I'll go to the Hollywood Bowl. Just got to find a babysitter. And then the other, I've been listening to the new album from Churches with a B for the U. It's pretty good stuff. The album is called Screen Violence, and it has a lot of, like, Stranger Things sounds throughout, so that's super fun. The song I'll put on there is called He Said, She Said. And then finally, Jean-Baptiste, one of Chris and I's favorites. He's putting out a whole bunch of remixes from his latest album. So for that last part, Bring the Children to Me, we'll put on We Are, which is about children. The Montmartre remix. That's what
nice.
I got.
Nice. Nice. I like it, man. Well, man.
You got some good news, maybe. You got some playlists.
Oh, yeah.
We've
given the people what they want.
You got some reality. It's been real.
Vinyl to vinyl. Do whatever you want, but spare their lives.